You are now listening to the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Photography Enthusiast Podcast. As always, I am your host, Daniel Lee, or Photos by DLEE. So welcome to the very first episode as well of 2021. Happy New Year to everyone out there. I hope you had a safe and happy holidays, and that 2021 will be better for you if you had a bad year last year, which I think many people did. Or, you know, either way, you obviously want the best year possible, so hopefully everyone has a great 2021. So in this episode, we'll be discussing how to become a Pokemon Master. For all the photographers out there, I will actually be discussing the future of photo sharing sites and, you know, what I would like to see from the next big photo sharing site. And keep in mind, I'm not talking about social media sites, Facebook, Instagram, that kind of stuff. I'm talking about like a proper site for photographers like Flickr, 500px, that kind of stuff. And then we'll just be going over some news topics and the usual, you know, what I've been up to and sort of stuff. So when saying that, my personal updates and what I've been up to first off, as always with my guests, which is, you know, still under control technically, I have ordered the Tamron 100 to 400 millimeter lens for Sony. Still have to remember I'm with Canon for EF lenses. So I've got an adapter on order, which will hopefully arrive soon as well, because I don't want to have the Tamron without the adapter. I can use it on my EF, like my M5, because I do have the EF adapter for that. But obviously I prefer to use it on my R6, better AF, better sensor, better everything pretty much. Now, I decided to get it now because the sales are pretty good and I don't know when it'll be that cheap again. And I realized, you know, if you remember, for my goal for 2021, it was to buy one lens only, which was meant to be the UWA 14mm prime when I need to travel. But with how things are going, especially in terms of vaccines, because I know there's been some talk here in Australia, what they're going to do is they're going to limit the travel of people who don't have the vaccine. So you don't have to take the vaccine, but you can't travel if you don't, or, you know, they might even say you can't work if you don't as well. So because of that, I'm going to take the vaccine, just to be clear. But the way they're rolling it out, where stage 3 or stage 4 or whatever, part 4 of the rollout thing, so it won't be till, I assume, much later in the year. And, you know, you don't really want to travel straight away. Number one, I think things will be restricted. Number two, prices are probably going to be still a bit high because all these airlines need to recoup all the lost funds from all this time. You know, who knows, they may be smart, keep things as what the prices used to be and just make money purely off volume. But I do think prices are going to be high, so I probably will be waiting till 2022 before I can travel again and save up, maybe do a few more trips, you know, more traveling in that year rather. Or maybe I'll just try and do my Japan trip later in the year if it seems like we're going to get the vaccine early. But yeah, as I said before, this lens will be mainly for cityscapes, I like to think. In Sydney, we've got a lot of nice locations that are quite far from the CBD, which the 100 to 400 would be perfect for. I did have a lot of fun when I went to that Sony event where I got to shoot birds as well. So that's something that I really want to try doing, wildlife photos as well. When I look back at my photos, you know, like one I got of a parrot or cockatoo or something like that, I got to learn birds' names as well, was at 135mm because I was using the 135 prime and I really liked it. The one I took of the Noisy Miner, which was like my best bird shot to date since I pretty much only took bird shots that one day. That one was at 433mm, so I could have got a little bit closer to the bird that day without scaring it. And I could even, you know, the framing I was at, the difference between 400 and 433mm wouldn't be that great. It would be very, very tiny. Even if you were the type that crops, you'd be doing the tiniest crop. And with my photos, I have something a bit different in mind for what I'm going to do for my bird photos. I don't want mine to look like everyone else. How I'm going to do that, that's something I have to figure out once I'm actually doing it and in practice, but hopefully it all goes well. Get the lens, get the adapter not long after. Then once daylight savings ends, the heat weather cools down, sunrise is a bit earlier, I can get out there and start shooting birds, not with a gun, with a camera. So I'm not going to harm birds, just to clarify that, for depending on where you live and what that term means to you. I released a blog post as well on Photos by DLEE last week as well. I've been using my R6 a lot with the Godox. I've been finding it works really well. I didn't have any issues in either high speed sync or normal shooting. The reason why, I did a lot of portraits and product stuff with the flash gear. I had a really old LinkedIn photo. It's not so much old, I took it last year, I think. The main issue is that I use this Korean beauty app called Snow. Now Snow, it's, you know, aimed to people who want to look like they have makeup on, skinny their face. So it didn't look exactly like how I look. And I'm pretty sure I added lipstick on as well. So I needed like a proper headshot. Like, now that I got my degree, I'm a serious grown adult, even though I'm already in my 30s. But, you know, like I needed to look proper. So I thought it's time to do a proper headshot. So which I did take. I've uploaded that to LinkedIn. It's on my blog post. To me, it looks good. I'm happy with it. So I'm all good for that now. And, you know, it was a good test for the Godox to see how that works. Everything's been working beautifully with the R6. Still absolutely loving it. Have been customizing it more to sort of get a hang of it and change some functions around. Like I find I'm using a spot kind of AF a lot more and focusing on that spot and just using the rear screen rather than the joystick, because the joystick's good, but if you can use the rear screen compared to the joystick, it's night and day difference. And for those Sony users, I don't know about other cameras, the A7 III, it wasn't very responsive when you use the rear screen, but with the Canon, it is amazing. It's instant. It's like as if it's a smartphone because it's that responsive. But yeah, now I have it. So my AF on button is just, you know, like my back button focus. So say, for example, I wanted to take a photo of a bird or something. I could move my spot over the bird, focus on it. Then I switch to the star button or asterisk button. And that one's actually IAF. And then, you know, I just initiate IAF. I'm good to go. Simple as that, rather than staying wide the whole time. So that's pretty much it for the personal updates. What we're going to do is we're going to go into some news topics, quite a few announcements and releases. So we'll get right into that. So the first and quite an exciting announcement, especially if you're a Sony user, but you know, I'm technically not one anymore, but I'm still excited, is Sony have finally announced their FE35mm f1.4 GM lens. Now, if you're unfamiliar with Sony gear, their current 35 was a Zeiss branded one, but it was known for quality control issues, left a lot to be desired. Well, not a lot, it was a decent lens. Like I tried one at one of the Sony events I went to at the museum, but you know, at the same time, it just wasn't that spectacular, especially up to the newer lens standards like the 135 GM, 24 GM. This lens is already something quite unique, because if you look at Canon, Nikon, you know, when we're looking at both EF, RF, Z, F mount lenses, even Sony's existing ones, most 35 Sigma as well, most 35 1.4 lenses are around 600 grams or quite a bit over sometimes. This Sony 35mm f1.4 GM is only 524 grams. And it's just a tiny, tiny bit bigger than the 24GM, which itself is already quite small. This to me is like a very, very big thing. Like the smaller the lens, the easier it is to carry it around on your back and all that. It makes it a lot more fun to shoot with, more pleasure. You know, the more you take your camera with you, the more you get shots and the more likely to get capture some really great moments. It's got all the usual stuff. It's got your extreme spherical elements and all that extra low dispersion elements. I find it hard to say, and I was tempted not to even mention them. It's got 11-bladed diaphragm for the aperture, so you get a lot nicer around the bokeh balls. And it's got 14 elements in 10 groups, so quite a complex construction. It can focus quite close as well. I think it's around 27 centimeters is the closest focusing distance, which is very, very good. But at the same time, most 35mm do focus quite close. When it comes to one last thing as well, it has a 67mm filter thread, so it keeps the same size filter thread as 24GM, which is quite common filter thread size, 67. When you look through the sample photos of this lens, they're actually all very, very nice. The one only, sort of only issue you could really pick on them is there's quite a lot of chromatic aberration in some of the photos, the sample ones from DP Review. For me, this is not an issue because it's easily corrected in post. It's not something that, you know, like banding, extreme banding, well, not really, that would be more the sensor, but as an example, it's not something like that that's not really easily fixable. CA, you just apply profile corrections and you're done. Otherwise, the rendering looks quite nice on it, which is where, in my opinion, the Sony 35mm f1.8 had the issue. Now, here is the most important part, to me anyway, about this lens. Now, keep in mind, this is a 35mm f1.4, but it's coming out at $1,399 US. So to me, this is very important because for that price and the quality and everything it offers, this is really good. Now, Canon, Nikon, for example, yeah, now they can do f1.2 lenses, they can do all that. But what you have to understand is so many people go, I want this f1.2 lens, this f1.2 lens. But these lenses, they're to make them f1.2, they're going to be bigger, they're going to be heavier, and they're going to be more expensive, much, much more expensive. Where Canon and Nikon really have to sort of learn, they have to drop their prices, especially Canon. So if you look at B&H, for example, $1,399 for the Sony FE35mm f1.4 GM, whereas for the Canon EF35 L Mark II, that one is $1,799 compared to Sony's brand new lens that just came out for $1,399. And you know, if Canon do a 35 f1.2 GM, that's going to be really, really expensive. They need, you know, say, I think, because you know US prices, I don't know US prices, off the top of my head like I would AUD prices, but I think, you know, say like the 8512 GMs, $2,200 US, if they release a, you know, say a 8514 RF lens, like an L lens, don't even have to make it L, just 8514, and make it around that price, you know, 1300, 1400, that kind of thing. We're good, you know, everything's good. Canon users have that option of something in the middle, you know, fast aperture, great image quality, just maybe not that really wow factor like an f1.2 lens. But now the playing field on the body wise, you know, everyone's very equal. It's just about the lenses. I always say, it doesn't matter so much about the body, it's about the lenses. The lenses should be what you look at when you want to buy a system. And in this case, Sony are being very, very competitive with their lenses. Hopefully this means Canon will drop the price of theirs, but who knows. The next story, another one from Petapixel, was camera sales shrank 40% in 2020. So according to the BCNNR, which is a major Japanese camera retailer, they released their data from the whole of 2020. So I believe this is just for Japan, not from worldwide. But according to them, that yeah, we had a 40% drop in sales. So a lot of people say it's all gloom and doom with this sort of stuff compared to previous years. You know, if you look at a certain year, 2000, I think most people go on about 2010 and what the sales were like back then. Yes, sales are down, but I don't think it is much of an issue. I think it's sort of, it is called, I guess, an issue, but it has to do more with the camera industry itself. So if you look at, say, 2010, which I think was when sales were at their highest, we had like the 5D Mark II, which was a revolutionary camera. It offered something that no other camera did. Like, I remember when I first started, that was very popular. So everyone would go on about how you could shoot ISO 6400 with so clean. You know, obviously its video was very revolutionary at the time. It didn't usually get offered in an interchangeable lens camera. I remember even, I think it was the 5D2 and the 7D2 was used to film part of Avengers in their action scenes, because it, you know, that was a big thing back then. But since then, obviously stuff like dynamic range, autofocus has improved, but it's sort of evolutionary. You expect it to improve, whereas back then you didn't expect video to be included on a DSLR. Because of this, I see it as more, people don't need to upgrade every single day, like, well, not every single day. That's a bit of an over-exaggeration, every single few years. So if you look at Sony with their A7R line, I've said it all along, they release it way too often. Like, I'm pretty sure we're going to get an A7 V this year as well, even though the A7R IV has nothing wrong with it. It's an amazing camera. The only thing that could really improve is the frames per second, video, and who knows what else, maybe weather sealing or something, but they'll probably still find a way to improve it. New menus, flip out screen, there you go, done, A7 V. People will buy it. A lot of people online will try to say that, oh yeah, this camera's, you know, you need to upgrade, you need to do this. I would be curious to see, say, for example, if you look worldwide, just say Sony, just Canon, just Nikon, look at the amount of units that have shipped. Now look at the amount of people that frequent a forum that use that brand. I bet you it's not even like 2%, probably even 1% of the people who post online, like forums, all that kind of stuff, don't even care about gear, don't even care about upgrading. It's only the, sorry, I've got the wrong way around. It's mainly the people that post that, the, like me, like the real people with gearheads that are into upgrading all the time. Whereas the majority of people who buy these cameras just use them and don't really care as much. I know so many people, like there was one guy I knew back in Perth, he was, even like up to a year or two ago, he was still using a 60D. He had his 60D before I had my 550D. He got his just before mine. And he was still using it. I've gone through like five cameras in that time. My friend Joey of LaughSlights.net, he's still using his D610 and he's happy with it and hasn't upgraded. A lot of people are like this as well. Not everyone has to upgrade every few years. Myself. I'm always still in the camp that if they want camera sales to improve, cut back every 4 years, like what Canon used to do. Every minimum 3 years, I'd say around four is a sweet spot. And rather than do incremental upgrades, do massive upgrades. The A7 II, the A7 III was a massive, massive upgrade. Pretty much, you know, no one had seen a camera with that specs, that features, and that performance and quality for that price. They need to do that and blow people away with every single recent release. And not just Sony, Canon, Nikon, everyone needs to be doing that. That's sort of, you know, my personal opinion on it, but I guess we'll see how the release patterns are, especially for Nikon and Canon. Like, I'd assume Sony keep their sort of release cycles, you know, 4 years for the A7 line, same similar 4 years or whatever for the A7S line, and then the A9 II or the A9 line and the A7R line, their flagship lines, they update more regularly. Otherwise, in other news, Nikon have announced that they will no longer provide international warranties for Nikon lenses and accessories. So Nikon, you know, recently had, they apparently a few months ago posted it on Nikon Japan, Now they've posted in English as well. This is what they said, as a direct quote from Petapixel. We have considered a variety of options, but ultimately decided to begin the gradual transition from international warranties to original warranties for interchangeable lenses and accessories in January of 2021. They did say that any product purchased with an international warranty, and if that international warranty remains valid, it will remain valid for its full term and they will honor it. But say as of now, if you buy something, say you're currently live in the United States and you go on a holiday to Hong Kong, Japan, that kind of thing, decide yourself to pick yourself up a shiny new D850 with some lenses, it's likely that, you know, you take it back home, something happens with it, they will not fix it. Which to me, I don't know, kind of seems unfair, but at the same time, I feel like they should really balance the pricing out. Like for example, the prices are all over the place. You know, what you buy something for in US is completely different to here. Sometimes we get it cheaper, sometimes they get it cheaper. They just need to make a standard. So for example, Nikon, Sony, Canon, they're all Japanese companies. Although I'm pretty sure it'll be quite higher than what we get here. The price should be, you know, say it costs 10,000 yen. I don't even know how much 10,000 yen is, but say this body costs 10,000 yen. 10,000 yen converted to US dollars is how much they should pay at like a standard rate when it's released, and keep that rate the same as, you know, 10,000 released to AUD. Obviously, so many factors come into this: import prices, you know, inflation, tax, all that kind of stuff. But the gray market issue won't go away until pricing is fair. Like I remember the CEO of Google quite some time back copped a lot of heat because people were complaining about to him, or governments and that movie companies were complaining to him about piracy. And he said something very true, which is very correct, but they still got angry about it. He said there's no such thing as a piracy problem. There's a pricing problem, which is true. If you price stuff fairly, people will buy it. If you don't price it fairly, people won't buy it. Simple as that. They'll find the cheapest alternative or buy it from somewhere that sells it cheaper. Obviously, if you don't buy, you know, gray market gear or stuff when you're traveling, this would not affect you. You don't have to worry. You don't have to lose any sleep. But if you do, or if you have recently, you'll technically be fine. But just be careful. After now, it's not worth buying it while you travel. Although, you know, it's good fun, you know, makes it nicer coming back with some gifts from a holiday. It's not worth it anymore. Now we'll get onto our main topic. So in terms of photo sharing sites, especially for photographers, I don't personally think that it's not in quite a good state. There are certainly a lot of options, but whether those options are good is another thing, and it's sort of up to your personal opinion whether you think they are or not. Over the years, whichever one has been in prominence has been changing, you know, constantly. At the moment, Instagram seems to be the main one used by the majority of people. To me, this is more of an issue because it's more of a social media and it leaves a lot to be desired, feature-wise, interaction-wise, everything like that. Each person, you know, they do want something different from a photo sharing site. I actually asked, you know, started a thread on DP Review about this, got quite a few different responses of what people like. Some people like Instagram the way it is. Some people want something more, something different. Everyone wants something different. You'll never please everyone. You know, ask a question, get five different answers, kind of sort of thing. Back, you know, when I started photography in 2011, even a little bit before, that was Flickr's time, where Flickr was the site to be on for photographers. That started to die down a bit, and that's where 500px stepped in and really took over. That was a great site, great fun for a long time, but eventually it just sort of died down a bit. They made a lot of questionable choices in regards to ownership of people's photos. I believe the people who founded it had sort of sold it off. And then I remember they made some deal, or the Chinese version of Getty, from what people described them as, took over, which a lot of people didn't like. And a lot of people started closing their accounts and not using it. And that's where sort of Instagram stepped in and a lot of people went on there. I think most people would agree that we are overdue for something new. We do need a site just for photographers, not a social media where you talk to your friends, you know, follow celebrities, that kind of stuff. We need something where photographers share their best of their work and only photography, nothing else. That's what we need, but nothing has come around yet. For me personally, if I had the money and the time, I would love to make my own site, but my coding knowledge is next to zero, and the amount of time and effort it would take to do that would be crazy, but I can still talk about what I'd like to see in a photo sharing site. So here we go. Now, the first and most important part is memberships and pricing. Paid versus free. Should it be one or the other? Should it be a mixture of both? I think it should be a mixture of both. Now, when I first joined Flickr in 2011, the way it worked was when you first sign up, you get 200 photos on the free account. Then after that, you know, you can't see the older photos and you need to go pro if you want to be able to access everything. I remember when I think it was when SmugMug took over or someone and they changed it back down to 1,000 photos. People were so angry. You know, how are we meant to do 1,000 photos? Like when I started, it was 200. So 1,000 is really generous. If I was to do the site, I would do 200 free photos as well. Mainly because that gives you enough time to actually upload photos, use the site, get a feel for it, see how much you like it. If you were taking the 500px approach of not uploading absolutely everything you take and just doing the best of your work, then 200 would last you a long time. Imagine if you upload one really amazing spectacular image a week, or you know, say a week. So 52 weeks in a year, if you have 200 photos, that's nearly 4 years, you know, or a little bit over 4 years, you could go without having to pay for an account. So 200 is more than enough if you are uploading your best quality images only. Then after that, do a paid account. The other good thing about it is, you know, number one, less people will be just dumping every single image or using it for hosting as a backup for their photos, which you're better off using Google Drive, OneDrive, that kind of stuff. It'll also make the memberships cheaper, because if people are just dumping their images like they done with Flickr, the cost of maintaining those servers is a lot higher, which makes the cost of memberships higher. That's why when with Flickr, I would love for them currently to just limit free accounts to 200 photos and you can't view anything else after. Because a lot of people who have dumped all their images on it will probably get angry, delete their stuff, less server costs, the price of pro memberships can go down, and they can spend more time actually on focusing on expanding the site and making it better rather than, you know, maintaining servers, maintenance, all that kind of stuff. In terms of photo quality, the way the photos are displayed, something like Flickr or 500px, both of them made me, you know, impress me. I'd say 500px was a little bit nicer just in the general web design. Whereas with Flickr, I do like the ability to share it with a BB code to forums. Although, you know, you can do it yourself as long as you get the URL. Usually you can just add the code in, but it makes it more simpler if you, you know, can just have it done for you. Either one, as long as it's like one of those two, you can see your EXIF data, all that sort of stuff, I'd be very happy with that. I do not want anything like Instagram. For me personally, I hate the low quality, how they compress the images to hell so you can't even tell how good of, you know, how sharp it is, that sort of stuff. If you're looking at lenses, especially, you know, say when people want to buy a lens, they usually look at Flickr to see what the lens can do or look at that kind of reviews. Whereas with Instagram, everything's so heavily compressed, you can't even see. With Twitter, at least, you can actually see the quality of a lens because it doesn't compress. I'm pretty sure they would do some form of compression, but it doesn't. It's, I guess you could call it lossless or lossy. With their compression, you can still see the quality of the image, quality of the optics that had taken that image. One thing I'll say as well, you might not notice, say on a site like Instagram and someone uploads an image, at that small resolution, it's only like 3 megapixels, I think, or even less. You can't really see how well they've exposed the image, how far they've pushed it. Whereas on something like Flickr, for example, that does 6K resolution, if someone has that 6K enabled and they've severely underexposed it, pushed it up by 4 stops in post, you know, and then banding everywhere, it will be a lot more evident at that resolution compared to on Instagram. So you can sort of see the skill of a photographer more as well in that sense, or if you can see the skill, how well they can expose the image as well as compose it, come up with tell a story and all that kind of stuff. When it comes to how you discover photos, I'd like a mix of both Flickr and 500px. So I like Flickr's Explore. So from what I know and what I've read online, the way Explore works is an algorithm can pick out what the most interesting photos are based on comments, views, favorites, and that. And then I think someone actually goes through and sort of checks to confirm. I guess, you know, also checks that all photos are safe for work and that kind of stuff. With 500px, their popular was quite good as well, worked very similar. Either way, both work really well. What I would love to see is someone make an algorithm that can actually detect certain comments. So anyone who used 500px would remember, was it like LNF, like and favorite, and then just expecting you to return it. So return the favor and like and favorite theirs, and that's how they would get into popular. It was literally a popularity contest. So I'd love to see the moderators or whatever, owners of the site, be more proactive with this. Work it into the algorithm that, you know, oh, you picked up this photo, has 50 comments, but then all of them are LNF. So it means that they've, you know, liked and favored someone else's in exchange for that. Push them down in the algorithm. Actually make it so when someone comments on your photos, which I hate about Instagram, just nice pic, come check out mine. Same as 500px as well. I don't comment much on Flickr, but when I do comment, I try to make it meaningful. I won't just say, nice shots, beautiful tones. I'll try and say, hey, you know, I went to this location as well. you really capture the great how you're liking this lens. You know, I actually try to make it seem like I've actually looked at the photo and not just copy and pasted the same comment photo after photo after photo. So if they could work that into their algorithm and actually punish people for doing that kind of stuff, that would be absolutely amazing. One thing they have to have from 500px would be the editor's choice. I like how you have that popular part where that one's purely picked from, you know, an algorithm, whereas editor's choice have some moderators, admins come in and actually find photos they think are really good, give them that editor's choice award. Sadly, I never got one when I used 500px. I could get popular all the time, but I could never get editor's choice. Maybe I should start using it again just so I can get editor's choice and stop using it after I get that. Don't want to waste my time with that. I would love a big more community aspect in groups, just like what Flickr has, but if they could turn it more into a kind of a forum in a way and have a lot stronger moderation. So, you know, so you don't have 50 of the groups of the same lens just because someone wants to own that group or whatever. Have this sort of stuff, a bigger community aspect would be really great because the community is what made Flickr so good back in the day. I have lasting friendships to this day from people that I had started chatting to on Flickr when I first started photography. I know a lot of people get that on 500px, sorry, on Instagram as well. I personally haven't had any of that. I find people are very superficial, following you to unfollow you, that sort of stuff. Just commenting, asking you to check out their work and that sort of stuff, which I would never ever do because not going to do that. I'm here to post my images. If you like my image, like it. Don't like it because I liked yours sort of thing. A lot of people would like an options for printing and licensing, which I personally think is important too. Whoever does make a photo sharing site has to keep that in mind. Try and attract brands to actually pick photos from your website. So say, for example, I had a photo site. I could offer, say Nike, for example. I want Nike to sort of be a sponsor in a sense. I'll advertise their products in the ads on my website for maybe a reduced rate or even for free, probably a reduced rate, if they are to look at photographers on my website, you know, maybe license or commission work through my website and the photographers. So say, for example, you're a sneaker photographer, you post a lot of photos of Nike sneakers. All of a sudden, you know, Nike can contact you through there to commission your work because of that partnership. Even though you probably have 50 million ads on the, you know, or not so much 50 million, but you'd have to alternate what ads are shown, try and get these partnerships and find ways to actually have these brands explore the work on their create, whether it be Creative Commons as well, and actually license and hire photographers through there. So that way people have that incentive, especially the ones that want their work out there. The same for printing, actually give a reasonable amount to the photographer. Don't be like, you sell the print for $5, $4.98 comes to me, $4.98 goes to, you know, the host of the site, 2 cents goes to you. You have to make it more reasonable. Even if it was like 50-50, 40% in the website's favor and 60% the photographer, you're still making a lot of money from that, but they're making the majority. Actually reward them. They took the image, they put the work in. Sure, your site's helping it be found, but actually put it out, you know, actually thank them because they're using your site, they're bringing the traffic to your site. So reflect that in how much you charge. One thing it has to do is not be a site where you dump all your photos. It has to be the best of the best, like how 500px was meant to be back in the day. Funny enough, all of this talk of 500px makes me want to just log back on and check out, see how it's going again. But that's pretty much the main things of what I would love to see in a photo sharing site. I'm a bit distracted right now, I have to admit, because it is bucketing down with rain. Didn't even think it was meant to actually rain today, but somehow it did. So in terms of how long until we see this kind of site show up, who knows? Your guess is as good as mine. I'd say we're well overdue and hopefully someone is currently working on a website like this. As I mentioned, I'd love to be that person that does work on a website and create a site like this, but I don't have the deep, deep pockets to be able to fund it. I hope you enjoy what I've had to say about this. Reach out to me on thephotographerenthusiast.com or at Twitter or anything. Let me know what you would like to see from your photography site. Do you think you agree with what I have to say? Or do you think, would you like something different? You love Instagram and hope photographers always use it, never go to anything else like Flickr or 500px or whatever takes over from them. One thing I would like to add before we end the episode is, you'll find in the show notes, there's a link to a Google's form. So this Google's form I've created so that you can suggest a topic to me. If there's a topic you would like me to cover and that I'm able to cover it in detail. So say, for example, you want to know what camera A versus camera B. If it was about cameras that I've used, I'll happily do it. If it's cameras I haven't used, I'm not going to read off specs because you don't really tell the true story of what a camera is like just by reading specs, because specs don't equal a good or bad camera. But if you have something else you want me to cover, you know, favorite locations, whatever, favorite travel locations, to photograph that I've been on. Anything you want to suggest, put in there. You can even put feedback in there instead of a topic suggestion if you want. Just let me know what you think. That'll be in the show notes, so check it out. You can do it anonymously as well. I don't have to know who you are. I don't need to know your address, your favorite food, who your best friend is, and what your favorite Pokemon is. You can keep all that stuff private. I don't need to know. But otherwise, this is a long episode. I hope you enjoy it, and thank you very much. Now, this concludes this episode, so thank you for listening. If you'd like to see tutorials, reviews, or find older episodes of this show, you can find it at tpepodcast.xyz. If you'd like to see my personal work, you can find me at photosbydlwe.com. All of these links will be in the show notes. Otherwise, you can find my links and everything from my website. If you did enjoy this episode, make sure to subscribe so you can be notified when we release a new episode every fortnight. Otherwise, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed it. Bye.